Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our conversation with Paul Coughlin on Christian Nice Guy Syndrome continues during this hour. We've talked about the false Jesus that you would find in so many churches, a Jesus tender, meek, mild, and pretty much powerless because he's passive. He just sits there, well, feeling what you feel, but not doing much more than that. A Jesus that cannot save. Our conversation continues, and we'd like you to be a part of it as well. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Paul Coughlin is a father of three in Southern Oregon. He's a radio talk show host, and he's author of the new book, No More Christian Nice Guy. We also have our in-studio email address. Because our lines are full, we'll be freeing them up here in just a moment. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's start with Bert in Washington, D.C. Bert, thanks for waiting and welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I'm in total agreement with you with regard to that. So often you enter into conversations with people about Jesus, and when I'm talking to you, I'm saying, you know, do you realize that Jesus stood up against injustice and unrighteousness? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when he had to talk to people, he wasn't saying everything in a very sweet, mild manner. And, you know, people want to get in conflict or argue with you and say, oh, well, you know, that's not being very Christian-like. Why? Because I told you the truth. You know, because you want to perceive him as being someone who was really weak and did not stand up. And you're confusing passion or love from the standpoint of saying, I would prefer to tell you the truth so that you can be free. Versus me, or you would rather have something soft and nice said to you versus me telling you the truth so that you can wake up from whatever it is that you're doing and adjust it.
Hey, Bert, hang on the line there, Bert, because I'm going to send you a copy of Paul's book, No More Christian Nice Guy.
Yeah, Bert, you're a member of the Good Guy Rebellion, so I knight you, a member of the Good Guy Rebellion. Yeah, imagine this. Imagine a nice drug treatment program. You go in there, they just say wonderful things about you, and they give you one of these weak little platitudes. Well, tomorrow's going to be a better day, right? Yeah, don't worry too much. Tomorrow's great. And, yeah, you're doing okay. You're doing the best you can. Yeah, that person's headed for destruction. Why? Because they're not getting the truth. We are a culture that just isn't big on fruitful conflict. We got such a false notion of what conflict is about. Many of us have been exposed to the fire-breathing kind of conflict, and we think that that's the only kind. No, I mean, we have in Jesus some great examples of conflict, oftentimes very stern, oftentimes very shrewd and practical, and always at their core, a desire, a need, or a want, rather, to bring truth and healing, which are forms of love, to people who really, really need it. You're talking earlier about injustice. Yeah, I mean, think about the nice people that you know in your life and ask yourself this fundamental question. Do they ever stand up to injustice? The answer is no. Why is that? They don't have it in them. They are nice, not because they are virtuous, but because they lack virtue. The nice passive lifestyle is a sinful lifestyle, and is something that we just can't get into our heads in the church, and it's too bad because it's really killing us.
Now, Leonard's up next. He's in Topeka, Kansas. Leonard, welcome to Issues Etc.
I was wondering when somebody was going to get around to this. I've seen this across a broad spectrum in the Christian society as a whole, this nice guy mentality, and I confront it, and all I get is this, man, you're weird. You know, and you actually want justice, and, you know, yeah, all these people are going to, you know, go to hell because they don't want to follow Jesus. They won't conform to his standard or expectations. And, you know, you get this, you're weird. I mean, you know, you're out there, and you're an extremist, you know.
Yeah, when was the last time you heard someone ask to leave church because they were too nice? It just never happens. Unfortunately, what we the modern day Christianity, contemporary Christianity, actually rewards passivity. All you really got to do in order to be a churchgoer is sit there, nod, and not really do much of anything else in order to be considered a good Christian. Again, good Christians are about what we don't do, not what we do, right? So if you avoid certain behaviors, anger being one of them, then you are considered to be a pretty good Christian. What's interesting is that Jesus didn't seem to avoid anger at all. He didn't seem to avoid anger at either. It seems to me, or conflict rather, it appears to me in the scripture that he almost goes out of his way. I mean, he could back away from the Pharisees and the Herodians and the Sadducees. He goes head to head with them, and he doesn't apologize.
In the temple. I mean, he doesn't, you know, he never backed away from it. I mean, but there were times when he would, how do I put this, when he knew the odds were against him, that he would back away from it. And that's
being shrewd. He had a larger mission in mind. And it is true that he did withdraw from a situation. He wasn't stupid. He was unbelievably shrewd. And it's something, again, think about the ideal Christian man, we're not supposed to be shrewd, but Jesus was.
Leonard, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. This brings up something else here, and I wanted to, it's another aspect before we go to the next caller that you talk about in your book quite a bit, and that is kind of the passive-aggressive nature of the Christian nice guy.
Yeah.
Wherein, if anger is something he's not supposed to exhibit,
yep,
he ends up just throwing kind of hissy fits or walking around pouting all the time.
Yeah, and let's go back to Ray's absolute cheap shot earlier. I'm kind of steaming over it, so really want to get back to that, because he's, you know, accusing me and accusing you of misogyny, of hatred toward women. Listen, my message argues for a broader and more powerful definition of love, but it's less sentimental and it's more action-oriented. From my book, no one could make an argument that it's an excuse to be a jerk. Rather, it is a game plan, a new way of thinking, kind of a manifesto to some degree, of my own kind of, you know, Wittenberg door, that if men were to follow this, they would be more loving and protective and supportive of the women in their life. They would not, and so this gets back to your statement earlier, Todd, they wouldn't feel the desire to play so many games. They wouldn't be so dishonest. Passive people are among the most dishonest people you know, because they'll never tell you what they think. They won't be straightforward. They won't be direct. And they play all kinds of games. They lie. They manipulate. But they do it in this backdoor kind of way that's difficult to detect at first. Passive men actually are the ones who harbor hatred toward women. Assertive, healthy men? No, man, they love the women in their lives. They respect them for who they are, respect the differences, and they do not look down on the women in their lives. In fact, when they get around men who do put women down, they stand up to them. So this whole notion that, you know, this argument is somehow against women, no, man, it is this disgusting, perverted, extreme feminism that causes misogyny, because it encourages men to be passive and weak. And what do? They backdoor their women. They backdoor women in general. They knife them behind their backs, and they're not happy in general anyway. They're fearful people, and they don't know how to handle women. They don't know how to be direct with them. So Ray and his group, they're creating the very kind of men that I'm trying not to create.
A quick call before we go to this break, perhaps time for the question. We'll get the answer on the other side. Chris from San Francisco. Chris, thank you very much for being patient.
Thank you. I had two questions. I just wondered, the caller has so many wise insights that he got after his background. I just wondered what the turning point in his life was that opened the door to some of these insights. And second, I wondered if the good and nice distinction comes from C.S. Lewis, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, about the lion who was not nice but good. And then I just wondered, too, if he's from Ashland, because I went to school in Southern Oregon College.
All right, Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Hard to answer all those questions so quickly, but no, I'm in Medford. I'm 14 miles away from Ashland. I love Ashland, love Southern Oregon. There is some similarities with what C.S. Lewis wrote, but they were largely my insights. C.S. Lewis is writing there about Aslan, the lion. Came to me later through an email from someone who read my book, which I thought that was interesting. And the big thing, and maybe we can get back to it on the other side of the break, is the thing that woke me up was this wonderfully, just delicious little insight. It was Jesus' sarcasm that woke me up. Because, see, nice people aren't sarcastic, but good people can be, so.
Oh, maybe there's some hope for me, because that seems to have emerged as my fatal flaw, my sarcasm. I hope it's not passive aggressiveness. I hope it's just a sardonic sense of humor. Maybe I'm like Jesus in that sense. I don't know. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation on Christian Nice Guy Syndrome. Paul Coughlin is our guest. Your phone calls as well on the other side.
God calls men of all ages to serve as his pastors.
Professor Rick Neufer, coordinator of the Alternate Routes to Ordination at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
I am privileged to work with many older men who desire to serve the Lord in the ordained ministry. The Alternate Routes program provides a way in which experienced laymen, teachers, principals, DCEs, and other commissioned ministers can receive seminary training in a shorter period of time than in the Master of Divinity program. Although no degree is awarded in the Alternate Routes program, Alternate Routes students still serve a vicarage as part of their program and receive all the theological education they will need for ordination. The churches of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod are filled with people of all ages. Thus, the church needs pastors of all ages. Have you ever thought about the pastoral ministry but have said, I am too old? Think again.
Concordia Theological Seminary, www.ctsfw.edu.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths into the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly contributor to Issues, Etc. To find out how you can become a confessor, an apologist, or a reformer, check out page 8 of the latest Issues, Etc. journal, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, grace, faith, scripture, for the sake of Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues, Etc., and you. We're talking about Christian Nice Guy Syndrome tonight on Issues, Etc. Paul Coughlin is our guest. He's got a great website. It's called NoMoreChristianNiceGuy.com. Just put it all together, NoMoreChristianNiceGuy.com. Now, before the break, we had Chris on the line. She had asked as one of her questions, the turning point for you. Mm-hmm. You said, and I want you to expand a little bit more on that before we go back to our listeners, Paul, on the sarcasm of Jesus.
Yeah, it really woke me up. And then let me talk a little bit about sarcasm in general. You're talking about the whole passive aggressiveness that can come with sarcasm. You're absolutely right. It can be an outgrowth of passive aggressive behavior. So you need to be really careful with sarcasm. And another caveat here: you do not want to use it with children. It is just simply too powerful, a little too philosophical for kids. Don't use sarcasm with children. It has a way of really impacting them in a painful way. I speak from experience from my childhood. Yes, it was Jesus' sarcasm that woke me up. He said things like, oh, you have such a fine way of ignoring the commandments of God. He said that to the Pharisees. If we're going to take that as sober prose, if we're going to take that literally, we're in a lot of trouble. Our theology is largely shipwrecked. He had to have been sarcastic. And when you think about the best teachers in life, right, they often use humor. In fact, I'd say most of them, if not all of them, do use humor. Martin Luther was a very funny guy. So humor in the hands of a teacher, in the hands of a philosopher, in the hands of Jesus, really only makes sense when you put it in the larger context of what we experience from life. And so I ask myself this real fundamental question. And by the way, these insights, I wish I could say I came to them on my own. I was reading this fantastic book called The Humor of Christ by Elton Trueblood. Really changed the way I looked at Jesus. And I had this equation in my mind. I thought, well, you know, nice people aren't sarcastic. But Jesus was sarcastic. Therefore, Jesus wasn't always nice. You know, and God just has a weird way, I guess, of reaching different people in different ways. And to me, that was an epiphany. It just woke me up. It was like a fog lifting at an airport. And I thought to myself, well, if he wasn't nice when he spoke to this group of people, what was he really like? And I guess got to tell you that when you went, it just opened up my eyes, I saw a whole nother Jesus. We worry, by the way, that we think by saying that Jesus was sarcastic that we pull away from his divinity. And we take his power away somehow. The opposite is true. We see a warrior fighting for us. He used sarcasm, Todd, to set me free from the false notions of how to really have a relationship with God. And he put down the people who were putting out the lies about God. And he did that for my benefit, your benefit, and our listeners' benefit.
Oh, by the way, he was also following his father's example. If you read the book of Job, especially near the end, we have some of the most unbelievable divine sarcasm out of God's mouth. When he's dealing with Job, who is down and is out and is at the bottom of the barrel as he can possibly be, God's there in a very unnice way dealing with him with that divine sarcasm. Let's talk with David, who's listening in Branson, Missouri. Hi, David. Thanks for waiting.
Sure. Thanks, guys. I've been enjoying the broadcast. I've got a question. I wanted to run by you a situation with my sister I thought you might have some insight on. We have a father and grandfather both who are both good Christian men, but, you know, sometimes exhibited personality traits that were hard to get along with, maybe a little sharp vocally or a little harsh sometimes. Just isolated incidents, not always, but anyway, it has made my mother and sister both, I would say, hypersensitive to that type of thing. And yeah. My sister has married a guy who's much, much more passive than any of the men in my family, and I guess that's what she's used to now. So it seems like any time I'm around my nephews who are crazy about me and don't seem to have any problem with me, if I say anything that sounds like I'm correcting them, no matter, I don't raise my voice. I don't use harsh language, but it seems like inevitably, before the weekend is up, I'm being told that I'm being hateful. And I've been mulling this over, you know, on this, in the car here, and I'm so tired of hearing that when I don't feel like, I've been guilty of it before, and I've apologized, and the Holy Spirit convicts me of that now, and therefore when I don't do it, and I'm still told I'm making the same mistake, that offends me.
David, let's see if we can deal with this. First of all, does this sound familiar just as a scenario? For the guy who's trying to, he doesn't want to be Christian nice guy. He wants to be Christian good guy. But yeah. People still have the Christian nice guy expectations all around him.
Yeah, that's true. And I have to say, one thing in dealing with women, and this has been my experience in the workplace and life in general, you gotta be different. You gotta be careful. You cannot speak to a woman in most cases, most of the time, as you would speak to another guy. They just have this memory like an elephant. They do not like to be treated roughly. You know, it's that wonderful expression, a man falls in love through his eyes, right, and a woman through her ears. I think it's mostly true in most cases, most of the time. I know there's exceptions, but you do not want to treat a woman roughly because they have a hard time forgetting it. It just eats them inside. My advice, David, just share your heart with her again and say, I'm trying not to do these things. I made these mistakes in the past, and I don't want to be harsh. I care, you know, your criticisms, I'm going to assume you're a person of basic goodwill towards your family. Your concerns and the things you see are because you care. See, a passive guy gets off in life so clean, right, because his passivity is seen as kind of a good thing. Good people can't help but comment sometimes. They just say, hey, man, if I see the people around me suffering or about to suffer, I don't like it, and I'm going to say something about it. Now, it's true our approach could be a little different, perhaps, a little more seasoned. You know, we're supposed to speak the truth in love and all that. We're supposed to be graceful. But, you know, the good guy can't help it. He can't hold his tongue. And I tell you, to have someone care that much about your kids, that's a very respectful thing. Hopefully your sister can see that.
David, give us a call back. I want to send you a copy for that question. I want to send you a copy of this book, No More Christian Nice Guy, by our guest, Paul Coughlin. Up next, Nelson in San Francisco. Nelson, welcome.
Hello, good evening.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm having a problem balancing this because my Christian friends will accuse me of being argumentative when it comes to dealing with a cult, for example. You know, Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. So if you are going to follow Jesus, we're going to have the same kind of passion that he have. He called people dogs. He called people snakes. He called people, when they call the Pharisees, that when they go overseas to make converts, they make them twice the son of hell as themselves.
Yeah.
Things like that. Well, how do you balance this? I mean, I think it's okay for us. Is it okay for Chris to call people names?
All right, Nelson, that's a very good question, and it kind of goes to the broader question here, Paul, with only about a minute and a half here before we go to our break. Now, no more than that. Drawing the line at saying, I'm going to use this as an excuse just to be, as you've said before, just to be a jerk.
Yeah, that's right. Again, when we look at Jesus's behavior, his rugged behavior, calling people names, and exactly what he did, referred to Herod as that fox. In today's language, that scumbag, right? Particularly what he did to John the Baptist. So, I believe Jesus used irreverent language, part of the definition of profanity. I think Jesus actually used profanity. I think profanity is not off limits to us. But here's the big difference. Jesus got upset about the right things. We, as humans, tend to get upset about the fact that our cable bill went up or that our neighbor's dog went to the bathroom on our front lawn. We can be really petty about the things we get upset about and get angry about. Jesus didn't. Huge, huge difference there, so we need to keep that in mind. If we get angry about the right things, so be it. Many of us are committing the sin of not being angry enough.
Paul Coughlin is our guest. He's a father of three in Southern Oregon, a radio talk show host, and author of the new book, No More Christian Nice Guy, When Being Nice Instead of Good Hurts Men, Women, and Children. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back, more of your phone calls, more conversation with Paul Coughlin, and your email. Stay tuned. We've all heard about the unrest, atrocities, and persecution in the Sudan. Well, LCMS World Relief is on the front lines of providing comfort and hope through several projects. They're helping to provide emergency food for children in southern Sudan, school books and supplies, grinding mills for Sudanese in refugee camps, and enhancements to St. Paul Lutheran Medical Center in Khartoum. Now, for more information on how you can help support relief efforts in the Sudan, look for the LCMS World Relief logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Their phone number, 314-996-1683. Late last year, the Republic of Sudan and the Sudan People's Liberation Army reached a peace accord. Many Sudanese who fled their homes will be returning. You can help the resettlement and the education of these refugees by supporting LCMS World Relief, issuesetc.org, or 314-996-1683, LCMS World Relief.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again, talking with Maggie Carner, Executive Director of LCMS Life Ministries, about the upcoming Image of God Bioethics Conference here in St. Louis, November the 11th. Maggie, is bioethics a subject for ethicists and scientists only?
First of all, the term bioethics sounds sort of scary to the average person, and people feel sort of intimidated by that. But what we're talking about here, the actual noun bioethics, means where we're dealing with the implications of what's going on in medicine and science and scientific research and how that applies to the average person. And everyone needs to be aware of what's going on culturally in this field today, especially clergy and scientists, of course, and medical professionals, and even right down to the folks sitting in our pews on Sundays.
So why the title Image of God Bioethics Conference?
We chose that title specifically because as Christians, we have always had a good understanding of what it means to be children of God, created for a special purpose and a special reason. And God has given us his image, and it talks about that clear back in Genesis. And so we've, today, that idea, traditionally our culture has always dealt with science and medicine with that idea in the back of their mind, that framework for understanding that the human, the Homo sapiens, are designed by God for a special purpose. And today that is getting muddied in the discussion, that concept and that understanding.
Finally, Maggie, tell us a little bit about some of the speakers that will be featured at the Image of God Bioethics Conference in November.
We've got some great speakers that are going to be there. We've got Gilbert Mailander, who is on President Bush's Bioethics Council in Washington, D.C. He also serves as a professor at Valparaiso. We've got Nigel Cameron, who he's testified before the United Nations about cloning. We've got Wesley Smith, who is a prolific author and lawyer who specializes in end-of-life issues, and he's been a frequent guest on Nightline and Good Morning America and some of the other, you know, popular shows on television. And all three of these keynote speakers are really dynamic speakers in their field.
For more information about the Image of God Bioethics Conference here in St. Louis, Friday, November the 11th, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Your phone calls, your emails ahead. We're halfway through this second part of our conversation with Paul Coughlin, talking about Christian nice guy syndrome. Lynette is listening in Jefferson City. Lynette, welcome.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, I want you to know that I feel I am a toddler in my Christian life, but I recently was dealt with a situation where I have an older sibling. We don't really know each other. We had terrible parents and weren't raised together, but I did have conversation with her throughout the year. She lived in a different state. She lived in Kansas. I myself live in Missouri, and she was always depressed, and I kind of, I don't know, common sense told me that she was a drug addict. And so it was one day right after Memorial this year, I called her, and she was just bawling and crying and telling me she couldn't talk to me. She is a mother of four children that she does not raise any of these children. She has them for visitations and stuff. Her youngest child is a female child, and I, God told me, she hung up the phone on me, and God told me to call her back and tell her to go and get her if she needed this, if she needed a change in her life. And I did. And Paul, I set aside my family vacation, and I have, two children myself, and I dedicated myself to help my sister get better. However, I brought her to Missouri, and I helped what I thought was getting her on her feet. I know she had a really hard time dealing with my honesty. She thought I was rude and mean to her, and I felt like she didn't feel that I was using very good Christian standards, maybe.
Well, we would say the same thing about Jesus, by the way. Yeah.
And okay, and let's deal with this then, Paul, because Lynette's question goes straight to something that I think we would be remiss if we did not deal with in the course of our conversation.
Yeah.
This is, although your book is targeted toward men, and this is obviously a subject that probably, where the major problem involves men and Christian men in the church, this passivity, this nice guy syndrome is also something that equally affects women, isn't it?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, Todd, about 80% of what I wrote in the book, women will find very helpful as well. There are three major personality types, and though, you know, I'm not a fan of popular culture, if people want to get a, kind of a glimpse as to what these three personality types look like, you'll see them on the judges of American Idol, right? You've got Paul Abdul, Randy Jackson, and Simon Cowell. Paul Abdul tends to be the passive one, right? She's nice, but she's not very truthful as to whether or not someone has musical talent. Then you have Simon Cowell, who's often very truthful, but he's not gracious in how he says it. He needlessly offends and hurts people. Then you got Randy Jackson someplace in the middle, right? Guy tells the truth often. No, not these guys aren't perfect, but he tells it in such a way that he doesn't needlessly offend people. But he still tells the truth. He is the assertive one. He balances truth, love, and graciousness. And, you know, hey, listen, if someone were to attend a drug treatment program, they're going to hear things that are painful to hear, right? They're going to hear the truth, but it's going to be told in such a way that it becomes palatable, partly because, or actually, largely only if the person who's in that program wants to be there, if they want the help. Some of the hardest people to reach, obviously, are the people who are, as you know, as Lynette was saying, a depressed sibling with four kids who has visitation rights. Apparently, the life isn't going well. But it also sounds like the person doesn't think the problem rests with them. Most, I know that type of personality. I have that in my family as well. And when they ask the question, "What's wrong with the world?" Well, it's everyone else. They're fine. They're great. If only other people would behave certain ways, everything would be great. Such people are very difficult to reach, Todd. Ideally, they need to be in the position to want help before it's offered, because sometimes it can fall flat. Lynette's comments there sound like she feels like she may have been, a little used perhaps, or didn't have her good work be appreciated. And that's a fact of people who joined the Good Guy Rebellion, right? Fact is, you are going to be misunderstood, as Jesus was misunderstood. Do it anyway.
You know, I've come across a lot of people of varying kinds of personalities. The ones that I value the most as, and this is an increasingly dwindling group of people, who you say, I can trust this person. I can trust them. They may not be the nicest people I know, but they will tell you the truth. Sometimes they're actually going to be wrong, and then they'll admit that they're wrong.
Yeah.
But they will tell you the truth. They may even do it in a way that at first kind of you feel a little bent out of shape, or maybe you feel a little dented when they do it. But they tell you the truth, and when it's all said and done, you say, you know, I'd rather have someone who's honest with me and just tell me. I'm looking at my producer right now. He's one of them who will just tell you the truth without any varnish on it. And when you're done, you say, you know, that's much better for me in this relationship than what it could be. Someone who kind of pussyfoots around, doesn't get around to the truth, or is just so afraid of offending me that in the end, they don't. It ends with them not even really caring about me.
Yeah, and you know, Scripture supports that. Obviously, you know, the wounds of a friend are far better than the false words of an enemy, or you can almost even say a nice guy. Again, a nice guy isn't going to tell you the truth. Why? Nice guys fear conflict. Nice guys fear life in general, because conflict is the sound of life happening. Life is just full of conflict. We must learn how to handle it in a fruitful, effective way. And I agree with your assessment of your producer. Jeff is a good guy. I wouldn't necessarily call him a nice guy.
No, not a nice guy, but he's out of the imagination. Tim calls from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Tim, welcome.
Is Christian Mr. Nice Guy just another way of saying Christian politically correct?
There is a portion of that, sure. There is a political correctness that reaches through the church, handed to us largely by radical feminism, not what I would call all of feminism, but radical feminism. I think that distinction needs to be made. And it's a desire to make men largely passive and take a back seat to life in general. And sadly, it creates the very kind of men that women don't want to have and that feminists claim shouldn't exist. I mean, passive men are some of the most hateful men toward women around.
Thank you very much, Tim. I appreciate that call. Here's Jeff from Frisco, Texas, and he writes us via email. And you seem to have gotten him going here, Paul.
All right.
In interacting with many evangelicals, it seems the key to their theology is vagueness. This is quickly and easily seen in things like avoiding confessions or denying denominational distinctives, etc. I think that this is a root issue behind Christian nice guy syndrome. androgyny is vague at its root. No masculine identity equals no image of God for men. This is like Adam standing politely by while the serpent tempts his lady. The result is the freedom promised. No, the result is tragedy for everyone. Specificity, writes Jeff, is a hallmark of Christianity. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one way to the Father through Christ. Christian men need to recognize that they follow one model of masculinity, Jesus himself, not some Oprah-fied, shadowy image of something that looks like a man. Please comment on how fathers can give this teaching to their children.
Sure, show them the real Jesus. When I have my family devotions, they're not like the typical devotion. Partly because I've written a book that's not your typical book, right? So I ask questions of my children during devotions. I play devil's advocate. Why did Jesus do this? Come on, Jesus. I'll say things like, come on, Jesus, he's just not being a nice guy, is he? I mean, he's not being what a good Christian man should be. He's behaving way too assertively, isn't he? I mean, do nice Christians tell their students, get behind me, Satan? Do they say things like, are you as dumb and dull as the rest? Do you say things like that the dead bury the dead, where the corpses, the vultures will gather? Jesus has sometimes morbid comments. But Jesus isn't out to woo us to his side in that respect. He woos us with his wonderful actions and his behavior. So I would say, in regard to our children, point out the toughness of Christ. More examples are found in the Gospel of Mark than any other gospel. So start with that one and keep a journal of the tough rhetoric and behavior on behalf of Jesus. And also, just in the Gospel of Mark, things that are uncomfortable. By around the third chapter, by the way, his own family and friends try to seize him because they think he has lost his mind. And when we get out of our mind this robotic, stiff, wooden, passionless Jesus that we've been handed as part of our cult, as our Christian heritage, sadly, when we get that out of our mind, we will see a living, breathing, dynamic, awesome Savior.
Real quickly, an email from Rob in Hillsdale, Michigan. I confess that at times I'm not a very nice guy. When I see a Precious Moments figurine, I have the strong temptation to grab a hammer and smash it to smithereens. Could Mr. Coughlin comment on this? We got about 30 seconds before the break.
Oh my God. Well, okay. I'm with you. The stuff we see as art, particularly in Christian bookstores, oh my goodness, let's just walk away. I think if anything's worthy of protest, I think some of that artwork is. We're big on the saccharine side of life and not really on the hearty side of life. And I tell you, the saccharine Jesus we have really is declawed. It doesn't have the power to really help us. But the real Jesus, whole other ballgame.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Paul about how Christian nice guy syndrome affects marriages and men at work as well. We do invite your ongoing participation in our conversation. 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Paul Coughlin is our guest, author of the book No More Christian Nice Guy. Dr. Ken Sherb, co-editor of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, The Anonymous God, on the biggest problem with American civil religion.
The biggest problem would be to begin to think that because you are a relatively decent citizen and that somehow or another you fit into this civil society which finds its place under God, if you're keeping your nose clean, obeying the laws, paying your taxes, then you must be in pretty good with God. Not so.
Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is called The Anonymous God, The Church Confronts American Civil Religion and Society. For more information about The Anonymous God, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040.
Contending for Truth in an Age of Anti-Truth. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Science seems to be moving at breakneck speed. How can Christians make ethical decisions on issues like stem cell research, abortion, and euthanasia? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join us for the Image of God Bioethics Conference, Friday, November the 11th at the Sheraton Westport Lakeside Chalet in St. Louis. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. regular guest Wesley Smith is one of the featured speakers. The Image of God Bioethics Conference, November the 11th in St. Louis.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back. We're talking about Christian Nice Guy Syndrome this evening on Issues Etc. Paul Coughlin is our guest. His website address, I recommend you go there, nomorechristianniceguy.com, nomorechristianniceguy, all one word, .com. Larry writes from Maiden, North Carolina, is there a relationship between the feminization of American men and the masculinization, I think that's the proper word, of American women, Paul?
Well, sure. Part of me thinks that, at least in regard to on college campuses, the answer that radical feminism has shoved into the mind of many students is just behave more like a stereotypical man, and that has I think that definitely hurts women. It kind of tends to go against their nature, and men have been told, again, you are what's wrong with the world. You throttle back, the women will throttle up, and we'll all be happier. We're not all happier, and that goes into the topic we brought up before the break in regard to what happens to the passive man in marriage. Passive man in marriage statistically is headed for divorce. The fact is, women are much more likely to file for divorce than men. They are the ones who start the divorce process. And when polled, why are they asking for a divorce? We have been led to believe as a culture that the husbands are abusive and they're committing adultery. These are the main reasons. The fact is, they are not the main reasons why women are filing for divorce. The main reason women give for filing for divorce is rather vague. They say that there is a general lack of love and support in the relationship. A passive man, especially a Christian passive man, is unable to truly love and support his wife. He is fearful, and when fear is in the driver's seat of your life, you are unable to love well. I speak from experience. You just can't. It's like cellophane is wrapped around your heart. You can't receive love, and you can't give it. My wife would make these wonderful statements toward me when fear and anxiety were in the driver's seat of my life, and I just couldn't respond. I just couldn't respond, oh, that's nice, you know, stuff like that, as opposed to, you know, receiving that deep and abiding love that she wanted to express to me. I couldn't. I just couldn't see it. Well, when fear and anxiety were dealt a major blow, far better able to truly love my wife and to receive her love and to truly love my kids. I was afraid I was putting this emotionless void in my children. I just wouldn't get emotional about things, and I didn't like it, and I knew it wasn't being like Jesus.
The tragedy of this, Paul, is that you thought all along, I'm doing the Christian thing. I'm being a good Christian father.
Exactly, because the good Christian father is stoic, right? He doesn't really show a lot of emotions, and he smiles all the time. I'm telling you, that is not how Jesus went through life. Just read the record, read the witness. He didn't go through those things. He has a blazing anger sometimes, and then he wells up with amazing compassion and sympathy. The shortest verse in all the Bible, Jesus wept. He wept more than once. This man was more alive than those around him, not less, but the ideal Christian man, for just some crazy reasons, is actually not supposed to show a lot of emotions at all. He's headed for a divorce court.
What about work, real quickly, before we go on to our email? What becomes of the Christian man in what many consider kind of the primary operation, his primary sphere of operation, his workplace?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's a sitting duck. He's a sitting duck for the agendas of other people. He, first of all, doesn't think he's supposed to have much of a will. He has been told by so-called men's ministries that he is actually a slave to his employer by some amazing scriptures being taken out of context. He is a slave. His employer is a slave owner. This is what they've been told. And one of the most popular men's ministry leaders in America, best-selling books, he's been told this. So he doesn't exert his will. He thinks that whatever nastiness comes his way, he deserves it all the time. And he's not supposed to change jobs because this horrible event in his life, this abusive stuff that he receives, which, by the way, passive people are often abused. Why? Because others know they can do it and they get away with it, right? By the way, Jesus didn't allow himself to be abused in those ways, but that's probably another topic there. Well, anyway, he's a sitting duck for other people's agendas, and as a result, he does not provide for his family well at all. He loathes himself inside because of it, but he puts a fake smile on his face and he pretends that he's suffering for the gospel when he's not. He's suffering, rather, for his own foolishness. He has taken an oath before God to provide for his family well, and that means being his own press agent. It means being his own promotional agent. It means acquiring skills that make him more employable, not less. It means getting over fear and breaking out and doing his own thing, if that's what he thinks he should do. He needs to throttle up in life. The last thing a passive Christian man needs to hear is that he needs to be more patient and more gentle all the time. No, he needs to read 1 and 2 Timothy instead. And there he'll see that the Apostle Paul encourage Timothy, to be more bold, to be more assertive. Don't let people put you down because of your age, he tells Timothy. Throttle up. Do not throttle back. Telling a passive man he needs to be more gentle in the workplace is like putting a drink in front of a recovering alcoholic. It is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
This is what John writes in Lincoln City, Oregon. He has an experience in his congregation where his pastor has recommended a book to the congregation that he just thinks is patently wrong, and he writes this. As a Christian man, on a deacon and part of the church board, telling the truth to my pastor and to our local church body seems a very important thing to do. I'm afraid that I've been labeled for this characteristic of telling the truth in these kind of situations in our church. What do you make of my situation? Asks John.
Yeah, you know, that is a major, major issue, and I hear it often. I would say this, major on the majors and let the minors go to the side. I know that sounds a little vague, but if indeed John is majoring on the majors of the faith, and it's not being well respected, then wear a crown of glory because you're doing the right thing. You're a member of the Good Guy Rebellion that I write about. You're doing the right thing. If we're splitting hairs on certain things of whether or not we should wear wedding rings in church, whether or not women should wear pants or skirts, the length of those skirts, sometimes you get into these ambiguous areas. Let's major on the majors and the minor things hopefully work their way out as we become more confirmed to the image of Christ.
Finally here, Paul, if the church keeps going the direction it's going with Christian nice guys, training armies of passive Christian nice guys, will men simply stay away from church? Will we have a predominantly female Sunday morning? What will become of those who worship on Sunday?
I think we're already there. I don't know where in the Bible it says that, me as an evangelical Christian, I've got to stand for 45 minutes in a moat all the time before the message. Can I please have some music that touches both my head and my heart? Does it always have to be sentimental? I think it does, apparently. There's some sort of rule that says it's got to be sentimental and emotional all the time. I'm all for emotions, and I think we need to express that more of them. But, man, I mean, a lot of our services, they just seem to be tailored for feminine sensibilities. Men who possess a more masculine spirit simply don't feel very comfortable in most churches most of the time. I know that there's exceptions, and God bless those exceptions. But they're I think they're just, you know, to some degree few and far between. We need to have a, we need to include more male sense abilities in our services, and that means not making Jesus so sweet and cuddly and saccharine all the time.
Paul Coughlin is father of three children in Southern Oregon and a radio talk show host. 1-800-737-0172 is the phone number for our resource line. You can use that number to request a free complimentary copy of our Next Issues Etc. journal, or to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible credit card gift. 1-800-737-0172. No gift is too small, or you can write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Paul, thanks for being our guest.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Paul's authored the book, No More Christian Nice Guy. You know, there never should be this problem in the church, but there is. And you could chalk it up to feminism, you chalk it up to the general influence of the culture and the prejudice against masculinity upon the church. You can chalk it up to a lot of things. This is the situation we've been dealt. Now, where's the solution lie? What are we supposed to do? Gather together and instead of having a church service on Sunday morning, hold arm wrestling contests? No. Sit around and link arms and sing manly songs or beat drums or sweat together? No. How about this? What the church has been given to do. Proclaim Christ and Him crucified, the real Jesus. To men, to women, to children, to everybody. To every sinner, that includes you and me. Because that's why Jesus came. Here's Paul, who has to face the same kind of opposition that his Savior Jesus did. And when it comes down to it, he says there, this is a trustworthy saying, worthy of full acceptance. Jesus Christ came into this world to save sinners just like me. That's a very manly statement, I would say. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117.